Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
Today's Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Tula Probiotic Skincare. And Talking Simpsons listeners can go to TryTula, that's TULA.com/LaserTime, and get 20% off their first order with free shipping.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons. This is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. I'm your host, Bob Mackey. When I grow up, I want to be a little sweetie pie.
Ooh.
Who else is here with me today?
Amber Dempsey Fence, it's day one, Chris Antistam.
Awesome. And who else do we have?
Petroleum Jelly fan, Henry Gilbert. Not really. That is the most disgusting Homer's ever been.
Pretty delicious. Mm-hmm. And today's episode is Lisa.
Hey there, Blimpy Boy. Flying through the sky so fancy free.
Yeah, it's so nice. And today's episode is Lisa the Beauty Queen, which aired on October 15th, 1992. Chris, what happened on this mythical day in Simpsons history?
You will not believe it. The day after their flag was flown upside down, the Toronto Blue Jays beat the Braves in Game 3 of the World Series. Madonna's sex book debuts, then gets immediately pulled from American bookshelves, and Garth Brooks' The Chase dominated the pop charts.
I have seen scans of that book on the internet, and it seems
you
pretty
see
hot.
Vanilla Ice's ass, your number one stop.
Yeah, that book was like the
Dennis
mythical...
Dennis Rodman, too.
Yeah, that book was like a mythical item when I was a child. Like, did you hear about this
it's
book?
Supposed to be the dirtiest thing. When
it was all over the news, and I've seen it, and I've just thinking about it, like when someone is so popular they get a bullshit book deal. Like, we just did an Ernest episode. Ernest has a book. And that's all this is, but Madonna's like, yeah, I'm just going to do nude shoots in it. And it became the most controversial thing in the world.
And it's all like photos, right? It's just a photo
book.
Yeah,
it's a bullshit thing. It's just, it's total bullshit.
Well, did she, is this where her hitchhiking naked picture came from, or was that before this?
I don't know, but she did look great.
Oh, good
for you, Madonna.
I will not disagree with that.
No, Madonna, super hot. But also, in October 15th, 1992, that was when my family moved to Jacksonville, Florida, in the home that I would live
Jaguar
in
Town.
Until I moved out here.
So Florida from Arkansas, was that a lateral move? What do you consider a better place?
Actually, so first it was Arkansas, suburb of Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Arkansas, to suburb of Atlanta, Georgia, Marietta.
Oh, wow.
And Atlanta, Georgia is the big city of the South. It's the closest thing to a Yankee city in the South.
So why was your family on the run, Henry?
Well, it's just where my dad's job took him. Like, his job
was
in Arkansas...
Was that brief period where the McCoys took over the Hatfields? They had to get out.
So his job in Arkansas then took him to Marietta. And then when he got the pink slip there, he stayed unemployed for a little while until his friend... got him a job at his new place in Jacksonville. And so we moved to Florida for that and uprooted our lives and all that. I do think it kind of affected me. Like, I maybe had the mental strength to deal with one move as a kid, but for two moves, I was like,
that's
right.
A lot. I had one move
my
in
roots
me.
Are gone.
Yeah.
All my roots are gone. And that's when I started to put on weight and had a lot of depression issues. But anyway, the nice thing when we moved there, though, it was Marietta was a fancier place. To go down to Jacksonville was less fancy. And I don't think my dad liked the big city feel of Atlanta. I think he preferred the smaller town feel of Orange Park, Florida, especially because you didn't have to go to Jacksonville for much stuff, nor did he want to. But the Jackson, when we got there, though, we moved into the place, but we didn't have all our stuff, but we did have our TV, our VCR, and not even all of our like chairs and stuff. We were going to get a new couch. We didn't have it yet. So we were sitting in lawn chairs taping and watching this episode of The Simpsons.
That's awesome.
I remember it distinctly being this one and us getting, like, I think Pizza Hut pizza, I believe it was. And And we stayed
before
there.
The Bigfoot era.
Yeah, just before the
Reggie
Bigfoot Fils-a-made. Era.
Reggie Fils-a-made.
Yes, and my parents are just now selling the house. Like, just my dad lives there now. But the house is being sold, and I've seen pictures of it. They completely renovated it because, like, our cats destroyed it. We didn't take good care of it either. My dad was of the mind to, like, why bother fixing stuff? And so,
it's going to break anyways.
But now to resell it, now to actually put it on the market, all this shit had to be fixed. And so it looks completely different. Doesn't even look like my house.
That is, Henry, that was the most shameless plug I've ever heard on the show. You trying to sell
your
house.
Buy my house.
Where is this listed? Where can I see this house?
Forge Park, Florida.
Awesome.
LaserTimePodcast.com.
It's funny you mention this. Whenever I move to a new place, my first ritual is set up the TV, put on Simpsons DVDs, and then unpack. Like, I have to have Simpsons DVDs. He's on in the background while I unpack. It's just the constant stream of comfort during the worst kind of thing ever.
Yeah.
Moving sucks.
I think that's why I haven't moved in the last 7 years, because I just hate it
so
much.
It's awful. You reassess your life.
Yeah, that's like,
I am just a monster.
Seeing this pile of crap, like, what if a match fell into this? Yeah. Like, would everything be better?
Would I be buried in this junk if I died here? Like,
and
why do I need this?
Only when an older family member dies do you realize what a burden you will be to everyone who has to go through your shit and throw away most of it and be like, who is this person? Like, what are they even collecting?
Yeah.
So, sorry to bring everybody down, but this episode begins...
I wanted to say that. It begins with something I've talked about many times before.
Disney?
That is great. I didn't get that clip, but it's because just go watch the episode. This episode's so good.
I did want to mention that Disney thing because this is one of two times they reference a famous Disney lawsuit or a pending lawsuit. I might have mentioned it during the Brother Can You Spare Two Dimes episode where, you know, I'll put Mickey's pants back on, the massage parlor thing. Disney was attempting to sue some Florida daycares who put Disney characters on their like murals.
Oh my God, how prevalent that was in small areas of Florida. And I remember being in Vermont and like, there's no way Disney signed off on a Tinkerbell gas station.
Exactly.
That didn't happen.
And like apparently Hanna-Barbera stepped in like, you could use our characters. And they were like, okay.
Nobody else is.
I feel bad for those kids, but it was Disney trying to crack down on people using their characters. Like small businesses, like who gives a shit? But this was The Simpsons referencing it twice, and this was like the Springfield Festival was like the happiest place on earth or whatever.
Yes, that's what it was. But Skinner, like you just...
Copyright expired.
So
Skinner
good.
Skinner reveals he's an X-Green Beret.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it should've gotten it. It was funny at the time, but it now felt extreme to see Burns' lawyer getting kicked. Like, him in pain, I was like... I'm fine with the goons getting it.
Like the last episode, a different level of animation coming from the new film Roman. I think maybe showing off or putting more flourish than Matt Groening even would have liked. Him first person kicking the camera, Skinner kicks the camera.
That was pretty
good.
I like how
he, like, doesn't he adjust his tie?
Yeah, that's like, that's the most un-Simpson shot ever. I loved it, and I loved the suitcase throw. That's great. But this is the thing that, like, immediately hit me, because I've said it a billion times on a billion podcasts. When the show started... I was exactly Bart's age.
I was going to ask you about this, Chris.
I was exactly Bart's age.
I'm glad you brought it up.
I was 8 or 9 in 1989?
Uh-huh.
And now I'm... Not only am I exactly Homer's age, here's the opening of Homer at the carnival.
I'd say 53 years old and 420 pounds.
Ha-ha, you lose. 36 and 239.
One, 420, guys. Two, that is like my exact weight.
Wow.
And age. I am Homer's weight and age.
Yeah, it's not fun to be that.
I was going
to
ask you, I feel like, I think Henry and I are now Marge's age. Henry officially is now Marge's age.
Does anybody know of any cool pre-order bonuses for guns?
I think Homer is drawn, though, not like a 239 pound.
No. In fact, he would be made older. Like, I think, Oakley and Weinstein aged him up to 39, and then later he'd be 42. I think 42 is now his canonical age.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
They made him 38 in the Homerpalooza.
Yeah.
They made him 38 in that.
In the terrible Spring Break episode, Kill the Alligator and Run, we discover he's 42. So I think that was the last time they aged him up, yes. But now he's 36, which seems disturbingly young as a 34-year-old man recording an episode about The Simpsons, a podcast episode.
But there's a lot of great little carnival jokes
so
in this.
Good.
I love it. The Martin being sprayed in the face with a water gun was great.
The haggis on sale.
Great little haggis joke.
That's where I learned about haggis.
The spook house. and also just one tiny Otto joke, and then he's gone. And I like to think this explains why we won't see Otto for a little while.
He's in Mexico.
In Mexico.
Did he kill children? I mean,
it was an empty. No one's in school, and it was an empty pod that flew off the thing. So.
And later, it's burning
it's
in the background
in the,
while Skinner talks.
Burning,
yeah.
Yes.
I did love this. This is the impetus for the episode. Not the impetus. The catalyst for the episode. That Lisa gets a caricature drawn of her. And again, I just wanted to capture it because I love Hank Azaria's blue-collar Chuck Bronson voice.
So, girly, you like roller skating?
No.
Yeah, everybody loves roller skating. Okay, you can turn around now.
Oh my God, I'm ugly.
That is essentially the same reaction I have to any photograph taken of me now.
I love the idea of a hack caricaturist. This is actually, the caricature of Lisa is drawn by the writer of the episode, Jeff Martin,
really?
Who worked as a caricaturist
Holy
as a teenager
shit.
In Detroit, some kind
oh
of Detroit
God.
Amusement park, yeah.
That is an actual gateway to being an animator?
Well, he's a writer, so I guess it never paid off. But if you want to become a Simpsons writer, start with caricature,
yes, please.
And you'll find your way there.
Funnel a bunch of people into the wrong career path.
Take our advice.
I just love that. Everybody loves roller skating.
And if you want to be a game designer, please cook a great spaghetti. That's got to start there.
But
it's all in the sauce.
So the meanwhile, Homer
has dreams of blimps.
I love his dream of the blimp. Like the animation of the thing of everybody turning over
so
his face,
good.
Like, beautiful. And also Ned winning that shoe buffer is pretty great too. Like,
I wanted that.
Yeah, what? Yeah.
But his blimp dreams, I love all the presentation of this, the cutaway nature of the whole thing, and just that, like, this is a. This seems like a Simpsons joke that should have happened 4 years from now.
Oh, yeah.
That delivers only on your expectations of where the joke is going to go.
Now, in a moment, we'll be raffling off our grand prize. A ride on the famous Duff Beer Blimp.
A ride on the Duff Blimp.
You see the circular pattern on those fields? That's from central pivot irrigation.
Wow.
Now let's see what's happening at the Super Bowl.
Homer! Homer!
A lot of Homer's fantasies involve football and the Super Bowl,
now,
I've noticed.
I want to say this right off the bat, and I'll have another example later on. This is the most Family Guy McFarlane feeling episode we have seen so
season
far.
Season 4 is very, very much what Family Guy would kind of borrow from for their cutaways.
They use thought bubbles, but it is mostly cutaways, daydreams, and fantasies.
I mean, this style goes so hard then into the critic.
Exactly, because
they take a lot of the animators and team from this season, move them to the critic, then that gets even more Family Guy-y, and then that is what becomes the Family Guy. Like, it's what the Family Guy... He comes in 99, so...
Never thought about how much Family Guy is like The Critic in its pop culture references.
Yeah, I mean, The Critic is where they just, like, they broke down all the walls, and it's like, every moment is a movie reference.
There needs to be no reason for this to happen. He could just be in a movie at any time.
Yeah, it was funny that on The Critic it first started with, he's watching a movie. That'll let us do a movie reference to then do... He's going to turn the corner and run into Marlon Brando.
And there's a giant Ed Koch attacking New York in real life.
That's just going to happen because we want him
that
to do
show
it.
Was great.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Talking critics next year.
But Homer wins it.
Homer wins it. But more importantly, Lisa assumes she's ugly. And I love Homer. I still use this on my girlfriend. This line on my girlfriend all the time.
Hey there, blimpy boy. Flying through the sky so fancy free. Honey, what's wrong?
Do you think I'm ugly?
What are you talking about? Oh, Lisa, this isn't real. It's just how you might look if you were a cartoon character.
I'm an Ugmo.
Now, that's not true. You're cute as a bug's ear.
Fathers have to say that and stuff.
Dad, am I cute as a bug's ear? No, you're homely as a mule's butt.
Not a great joke punch there, but I fucking
love
that.
I like, then Homer says, see... Like, Homer's saying, like, see, fathers can be cruel. I'm not. But cute as a bug's ear is a great saying.
Yeah,
so,
I love saying that. And just seeing Homer as such a dick in the previous two episodes, like, that's a good dad. Good dad
he's
moment
trying,
for Homer.
He's
so most 10-year-olds would not have gotten that Blimpy Boy reference, but I did because I was a big listener of oldie stations back then. It is the Seekers' Georgie Girl is the song. Hey there, Georgie Girl.
Is the girl's name Georgie?
Yeah, it's Georgie Girl.
Georgie LaForge?
But it's a woman, so the song is about her. Georgie Girl is not like picking a boy, or she's like not been in a relationship. She's just flying through the sky like she needs to settle down. And so That's the message of
it's Georgie. It's weird to write a romantic song about a girl named Georgie in 2016. It feels like a song about Opal or like Crystal or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. It's a very dated name.
Gertrude.
Or it'd be if it was about like Mabel.
Yeah.
Though Mabel from Gravity Falls, one of my favorite cartoon characters.
R.I.P. But
she'll be back.
It drives Homer to try and think of... like the Homer's drive here is to help his daughter.
Good old Simpsons giving him... the TV gives him his inspiration on X, which... Line of the show is in this TV clip.
I've used this so often in my life.
Him throwing the child in the air only to have it such a good understated animation joke. Fucking
it's a great joke, but
all of this is a long clip. I love
Whee!
It though.
Whee!
I guess every father thinks his daughter is the cutest.
Well, now there's a way to prove it.
Wow, president of Laramie Cigarettes, Jack Larson.
This year, Laramie is sponsoring the Little Miss Springfield pageant. You see, government regulations prohibit us from advertising on TV. Ah, that sweet Carolina smoke. But they can't prohibit us from holding a beauty pageant for little girls age 7 to 9.
Lisa's age 7 to 9?
Your daughter could be crowned Little Miss Springfield by our host, the maitre d' of Glee, Krusty the Clown.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
What a feeling. I'm as happy as a smoker taking that first puff in the morning.
That could be Lisa.
The Little Miss Springfield pageant. Only $250 to enter.
I mean, I cover video games for a living, and whenever there's a bored celebrity at E3 shoved onto a stage to talk about something for 30 seconds, I always post that image. Of Krusty saying, I hardly endorse this event or product.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's a perfect way to sum up a paid endorsement that nobody cares about and that they can't put the energy into or to pretend. Like, I've seen like at the Sony, at a Sony CES thing, which are boring as hell, but when they brought up Will Smith to talk about the cameras used on Men in Black 3, he, I think, brought some energy to it, at least. But meanwhile, there are guys that are just like, I'm Pele, I am here.
Yeah, I mean, the greatest example of this, it's on YouTube. Look up the unveiling of the Beatles Rock Band.
Oh, I knew you were going to mention Paul McCartney.
I love this so much. I wrote an entire article about this. Mm-hmm. Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr come out. Paul McCartney is chewing gum with an open mouth. And he's just like, looks like we're androids. And it's like, they're out there for 15 seconds. And they're like, thank you very much. And then they go back and they're gone. And they were probably paid like hundreds of thousands of dollars to give a shit when they clearly did not give a shit.
But it was still a thrill.
Or like when he was on the MTV Music Awards when he announced the video or song of the year as a... Lawrence Hill.
Oh, God.
Like, didn't give a shit.
I mean, well, look,
my problem was, like, spit out your fucking gum, dude, for, like, 30 seconds. We can get you a new piece of gum after the show.
Well,
maybe you don't understand. Sir Paul McCartney.
I mean,
this experiment.
I know.
It's different than Wintergreen.
The other guy said, I hung it on me wall.
I know it was a thrill for the people just in the audience to be like, I'm breathing the same air as the only two Beatles left.
A famous guy who hates me is right there.
You'd think so, but I honestly can't remember if I was there or not.
And you were. I watched it with you in the office.
Okay.
I know you were not. But
why wasn't I there?
But anyway. Heartily endorse. Oh, God.
That
so
is actually that comes from an Art Linklater endorsement for like the Game of Life or something.
Wow.
Art Linklater a game show host? I think he was.
I believe so.
Yeah.
This as a personal connection to me. I just, I'm a little kid. Getting woke to certain things, and I remember reading in a magazine that, like, cigarette advertisements are banned from television. Like, well, really? That's news to me, because at this time in 1992, there are not only cigarette billboards everywhere, like, the back of Rolling Stone is, like, all cigarette ads, and it just made me realize in local entertainment, they were real beacons for cigarettes to advertise with. Mm. They would be the sponsors of Springtime Tallahassee's Parade. They'd be sponsors at the baseball games, or just giant cigarette billboards. So, like, all their advertising had been limited. This is a very, I don't know, to me, a very smart joke from someone on The Simpsons.
Well, Laramie is a company from North Dakota, right? Like, that North Dakota flavor.
Carolina.
North Carolina, right. Sorry, North Dakota. Nothing's happening there. Not even street passes, right, Henry?
No, I can't get one.
I'm a little kid. I'm not paying attention. Yeah, cigarette advertising had been highly regulated, and they were weaseling their way into everything they could.
Yeah. And that's, the writers say they can take down cigarettes because they can't advertise on Fox, so it's an easy target.
It's their one, as they say. Hey, as Mike Reese jokes in that commentary and other ones, he's like, boy, God help you if you make fun of beer.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I think they got in trouble with that may cause rectal cancer, and Homer's like, beer. Yeah.
But
hey, don't tell me that.
But Homer, I like the little dramatic bit of Homer having to choose between the ticket and Lisa's picture in his wallet. Yeah. Like, that's really cute. And the downward spiral of Barney has come so far already that, like, he's a human science project.
The act one ends with wires sticking out of his head, him turning around to reveal wires and, like, a shaved head.
And I gotta give it to Lisa that she points out the flaw in the ugly duckling myth, which is, like, to say, like, you are ugly now. But, hey, when you grow up, you'll be pretty.
No!
That's a bullshit promise to give to kids.
Ugly in the wrong context.
Yeah.
You're being judged by stupid criteria.
I do love Marge trying to back out of that story. It's like, you're not the ugly ducking, you're one of the mean ducks, making fun of the other duck.
Oh, no. But that's Homer walks in and announces he's found a way to pick up Lisa's self-esteem and by entering into the Springfield beauty pageant.
If you could have one wish, what would it be?
To shut myself off from the world and never be seen by human eyes again.
Was your second wish to be entered in the Little Miss Springfield pageant?
What are you talking about?
I sent in an application for you. I couldn't find a big enough photo, so I sent in that funny drawing of you on roller skate.
How could you? I won't do it!
Aw, poor Lisa.
And then I also liked, as an animation nerd, I really loved Bart acting out Tex Avery animation.
That is so great.
Banging his shoe on his head.
Yes.
So that and just the meta-ness of they are drawing a more human-like character acting out cartoonish movements.
Yeah,
like,
it's great.
It's great.
Homer, Lisa's already sensitive about her looks. This is the last thing she needs.
But I think she'll win.
Dad, have you seen the girls they have in those contests? Hubba hubba.
Hey, nobody's prettier than my little girl.
Oh, you're looking at her through a father's eyes.
Well, if I could gouge out somebody else's eyes and shove them into my sockets, I would. But to me, she's beautiful.
That is so sweet.
That is my line of the show. I'm feeling kind of sweet. They have another one that
I'll sweet, put in there. That is sweet, but hardly endorse this adventure product as much.
And also, yet another more proof, Bart is gay. If you have ever been attracted as a male to someone in a beauty contest, you're gay.
He poses like Betty Grable in high heels. I mean, what more do you want?
I mean, Bart's mega gay in this one.
Yeah, actually,
we'll get to that, but the sad blimpy boy was pretty great, too.
Yeah.
No one's going to force you to do anything, but do you know how your father got the money to enter you in this pageant?
Nope.
He sold his ride on the Duff Blimp.
But that ride meant everything to him.
Hey there, blimpy boy, flying through the sky so fancy-free.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
Go Lisa. Playing with a pickle.
Yes.
He's so sad. So sad singing Blimpy Boy. It's beautiful.
But I have this small clip of Amber Dempsey. Is that a parody of anybody in particular?
I think it's just like, this is pre, like...
It's way before JonBenet Ramsey, I don't think, was even alive when this episode... And like, not
just
murdered
like now.
Yet. Murdered. I mean, she wasn't born yet.
Wasn't there some hideous show that Honey Boo Boo was spun off of, pageant children?
Yeah. I think it was Toddlers called. And Tiaras.
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
They're the most,
and Mr. Show made a great sketch about that years
I think,
earlier.
Mr. Show was the first show to really zero in on like the insidiousness of this.
Am
and
I
the
a pioneer?
Evil behind this. Yeah,
I mean, it is like they are pure evil. Like they're disgusting. Like parents forcing children into things.
Yes.
The people taking advantage of these poor idiots who are forcing their children into things.
And you can make a lot of jokes about like pushing kids into sports to like recapture the magic of your childhood, the untouched glory of your childhood. But the beauty pageants are awful. And there's no,
but
that's
at
why
they're like school age when they're in sports. Yeah. They're not preschoolers.
That like, scene in Jackass Bad Grandpa is like, everybody there deserves this.
Yeah.
Everybody there deserves this.
This episode feels fairly innocent because the parents are really not a factor. Like, the children seem to be there of their own volition and they seem to enjoy it. It feels like it's just like kind of like
closest,
a Rugratsy thing.
The closest thing to it is when you do see Amber Dempsey's mom looks exactly like her.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Definitely implying she is a very controlling stage mom. So
I love Amber
Dempsey. And also, the other girl contestants are super catty.
Like surprisingly worldly. But
feels like the joke is adults acting like kids, though. Like, these are, like, models, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah. I love... Because, like, I'm a big animation fan outside of The Simpsons. And The Simpsons doesn't do a lot of stuff animation does. And one of the only times... This is a sound effect I've never heard in The Simpsons again.
Oh, yeah.
Dempsey's eyelashes.
Amber Dempsey.
In the same week she was Pork Princess and Little Miss Kosher.
She's beautiful.
Wait. She's about to bring out the big guns. Eyelash implants.
I thought those were illegal.
Not in Paraguay.
I think it's literally a camera shutter, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't know what it is.
I mean, obviously it's a parody of, you know, breast implants or whatever, mm-hmm. like having work done, but on a child level.
But it's just not a thing or a sound or an animation technique that'll ever be used in modern Simpsons anymore.
I wish they would have revisited Marge's crush on Jack Nicholson.
Ah, yeah. That was so fucking funny. Jesus Christ.
I feel like, yeah, sorry.
Trying to fetishize the ass of a Simpsons character is impossible.
I love the way she's like circling her wine
it's
glass.
It's making noise.
Yes.
I mean, we saw Marge get drunk in season one episode.
Oh,
what was it called?
No Place Like Home.
No Disgrace Like Home.
No Disgrace Like Home.
But I think this is her first like Marge getting a little tipsy on wine, her like flirtation with wine.
Yes. Think about that. They had to give her wine for her to have any interest in anything.
Yeah.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Look, just like Lisa, we all want to unleash our inner beauty queen. And my skincare sucks, which is why this episode is brought to you by Tula Probiotic Skincare. And we want to let Talking Simpsons listeners know if they go to TryTula, that's TULA.com/lasertime, they can save 20%. And get free shipping on their order. What is this, Elston?
Hi, everybody. Hi. I came in to tell you about Tula. I drove over here. I don't have a car.
It's the lead character of my Big Fat Greek Wedding. And it's Tula.
But this is of interest to me because as I age, my skin is getting rough and gross.
I didn't want to say anything.
I expect this at this point. But Tula is a skincare/healthy living brand founded by a practicing gastroenterologist. Ooh. And media wellness expert, co-founder of Bobby Brown Cosmetics. But if you're like me and wonder, what does a gastroenterologist do and why are they making cosmetics? Well, it's the study of your guts, your belly, and your food, and your digestion, and all the bacteria that are in there that help you out, right?
How does that relate to skin care?
Well, you've heard of good bacteria, right? That's a word you've heard, and probiotics is a word.
Avocados, right?
Oh, yeah, it's good. Turns out all those good bacteria and probiotics are just as good for the outside of you as they are for the inside of you. That's a deep earnest plug, by the way. Tula Cosmetics will use some of the same good ingredients you would find inside of kimchi, inside of sauerkraut, and other foods I know you love to slather on your face. But I'm kidding. You don't have to put a pile of food on your face, but you will have all of the goodness found inside those foods working on your skin. Tula's stuff is said to reduce wrinkles, hydrate your skin, reduce inflammation, and just make everything feel nourished and healthy. Ooh. So rather than just a bunch of chemicals, it's stuff that's actually found naturally in existing objects on Earth.
So you're saying people can beautify themselves with no eyelash implants, not like Amber Dempsey.
You could put them in your pores of your cheeks and have eyelashes on your cheeks.
And you Talking Simpsons listeners can go to TryTula.com/lasertime and save 20% and get free shipping off your first order.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Does anyone else get these American Express Tina Fey ads everywhere?
Yeah.
She's like putting shit on and buying shit.
She's like at the workout store.
Yeah.
And it has like uncredited Thomas Middleditch from like, that's the star of Silicon Valley playing the cashier of like, it's like he's the star of a currently airing show.
But now they're showing up in my Twitter feed. Mm-hmm. I think because I said the word I like Tina Fey, and now it knows.
Also, you said I love American Express.
Shit.
My favorite kind of credit card.
It's my least favorite.
My American love for Tina Fey.
Nobody
boom,
takes American. It doesn't matter. You can watch her get less into these ads as the weeks go by because there was one. Whoever's editing them is like missing that very, very important half second before the video really takes where her face is just dead, no expression at all, and then here we are with American Express,
like they're live or something.
Yeah, and then that week goes by, and then the next week was her with the dog, and there's a split second of her just holding the dog with no expression at all, like, can we hurry? Look, I'm petting the dog, but the look on her face is so sarcastic. And then the one this week is her trying to eat a giant novelty sized heart on an airplane, which already I don't like. What's the combination of shit going on?
Yeah.
And the look on her face where she's trying to, like, mime, like, oh, it's too big. It's like, you want to kill yourself. Mm. I can tell you're so over it, but you signed some, like, obscene contract.
Get bonus time, Laser Time's weekly full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
Meanwhile, Bart's knowledge of this, Patty. Okay. Oh, you've got all
I
the,
do.
This afternoon, I'll take you to the beauty parlor and show you just how lovely you can be.
And later, I'll teach you the tricks of the trade. Taping your swimsuit to your butt, petroleum jelly on your teeth for that frictionless smile, and the ancient art of padding.
Mm. You know what?
That's gay.
Like, Bart, I think they gayed up Bart a little bit. I'm not judging this at all, but I feel like Bart vamps a lot in these episodes. Like, when he puts on, like, the Cockney accent, he does, like, yes, little bits for people, and he knows a lot about pageants, and he enjoys watching the beauty pageant in Streetcar Named Marge. I think they're, like, kind of making a joke
they
about masculinity.
They calm it down in later. Yeah. Like, it's not even through this whole season, mm-hmm, but in these episodes, they definitely are... I think the writers are having an interest in, like, what if we imply, like, a early sexuality on Bart?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's it. So, like, I called this earlier not a Family Guy-esque episode, McFarlane-esque, because what Bart reminds me of right here, I'm watching,
oh,
I usually watch
Adult
Swim.
On American Dad?
Like, Roger on American Dad.
Oh, Roger.
The alien.
Yeah.
In like,
they're both gay to a degree.
Well, they wrote something about him that Roger is the alien. And American Dad, I think, is a great show.
I like American Dad.
Is that Roger is... What is Roger's personality? Whatever we need him to be. That is what he is now. He's not an alien. He's just anything we need for the
episode. He's pop culture obsessed, number one.
Yeah,
and that
but like,
into his personality.
If you need a golf instructor, yeah, or like, and like, yeah, he's also like Bart in the scene, sexually ambiguous or kind of skewing to gay, but he's more like, he's whatever the scene needs. And like, I don't know, I just really, Bart is so Roger in this episode. He knows everything
I
all of a sudden,
that, yeah,
out of
that's
nowhere,
true,
out of, about beauty pageants.
There is no reason Bart should know this,
yeah,
stuff at all.
It is more, you're right in that it's a story functional thing to give him these kind of like stereotypically gay character types. But though, speaking of somebody who's stereotypically gay but not actually gay.
You, the guy in the Jughead t-shirt? That's not gay. Wait. Yeah, it
no,
is, actually.
No, Jughead's asexual. He's officially ace in the... But no, the Bob Fosse character goes by really fast, turn, pause, kick, pause,
kick,
pivot,
pause,
step,
turn,
pause, shudder.
Was that a character Dan Castellaneta played on Tracy Ullman? It feels like it.
I mean,
oh, wow.
Yes, yeah, but it's a very specific to Bob Fosse.
Yeah.
Bob Fosse... famous film director, stage director, choreographer. Mm-hmm. But he also, like, while people would think he's gay, he was actually famously a horrible womanizer. Like, he was never...
In your opinion, is there any other kind? Because I really would like to go back to being a poon hound.
A good womanizer.
I suppose he was just, let's just say womanizer then. But also he directed, you know, watch Cabaret. Like, he directed that movie. That's an amazing movie, which...
I will not.
You gotta look.
It's got hot Liza Minnelli, Chris.
Yeah, she's right. Some hot stuff in it. But also that the film is about the rise of the Nazi Party in
what?
Germany. You didn't know? Like,
no.
You might find it, you know, interesting these days.
I don't watch any movie with a silent consonant. It just won't happen.
Also, Chris, would you like knowing that all the music in it is diegetic?
Diegetic?
Meaning nobody... breaks out into song. The songs are what really happen.
Yeah, the songs are happening in the camera, I think, diegetic.
It's within the reality of the movie.
Yes, instead of in the editing bay.
It's a really good movie. Like, it won Oscars for good reason.
But I also love this talk about compliments.
Boy, when Lisa comes in, I want you to make a big fuss over how she looks.
She'll see through me like grandma's underpants.
No, she won't. When it comes to compliments, women are ravenous, blood-sucking monsters, always wanting more. More! More! And if you give it to them, you'll get plenty back in return.
Like what?
I'll tell you when you're older.
That goes into yet another cutaway, but a great one.
This is like the third joke of this type where we think Homer's talking about sex, but he's actually like talking about food or being lazy.
About Marge mowing the lawn for him.
Yeah.
It's an impressive runner that they kept it going for this long. Yeah. Though... obviously that's not how women are, guys. They aren't.
Most any compliment go like you.
Compliments
I
work
can't
on anything.
Receive a compliment. Nah, not for me. Like
they work
I'm
the
not,
opposite on me. Actually,
if someone compliments me, I'm like, well, you have to understand. The only reason I did good that time is because
Let me tell you why I
usually suck.
Thanks for complimenting me, liar. And then meanwhile, if somebody
I've gotten out of the habit
me, I'm
of
like, oh, okay, they must be right.
I don't disrespect anybody for complimenting me. It doesn't make it no longer makes you stupid for liking me. Jesus, that's self-loathing.
wait, my line of the show
through a lot of stuff.
Oh wait, it could be coming up in this clip.
This just having a sister and being around Bart's age at this time. This is yet another something I would call lie of the show.
That's the joke.
Bart working with Lisa and having to break down and make a minor revelation.
Those other girls are prettier than me.
Lise, as your brother, this is the hardest thing I've ever had to say. You're not ugly.
Oh, Bart!
it's
the nicest thing Bart said.
Yeah, but that would have been a really sweet thing for me to say to my sister, who I thought, because of sitcoms and cartoons and The Simpsons, that I had to have an adversary relationship. Oh, she's younger and I was jealous and she took all the attention. But
a roundabout compliment is the best thing you can give your sister, I think. There was a great caper to the scene with the compliments, though. It's like, Dad, do you know anything else about women? He's like, nope, that's it.
Nope, that's it.
Yeah.
No, that's it. You guys obviously can identify with this more because I did not have a sister. I only had a brother. So, I did not have the...
You have a younger sibling, you become immediately adversarial and jealous.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the second they show up, you're like, oh, I'm not getting as much attention.
And
this
stupid
is
babies
the
need
thing.
The most attention.
I had an older sister who was very mean to me, so I did not identify with this at all.
I'm still sometimes ruthlessly mean to my sister as we approach our 40s. It makes no sense.
So the Little Miss Springfield pageant.
Oh, God.
The song there, the Gasping for Air song, is an underrated gem of songs.
I've been refraining from pointing it out until now, but part of the Simpsons, I go off on like the chase music, the fight music of the Simpsons. It's all evocative of like 1970s entertainment that I wasn't familiar with at all in any way. But that's why I find it so funny and distinctive. I think that this is all like 60s and 70s music. That's what the Simpsons is doing. I
mean, it feels like a 70s variety show or something.
You can literally hear Waka Chica in the background.
You're right. It feels like a Sonny and Cher show.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like it's we're right out of the 80s. This is not an 80s parody. It's a 70s parody.
I mean, Lisa's bit is pretty much like a Osmond show.
Yeah,
bit.
And I can't recognize that as even now, but definitely not back then. But to me, it's distinctive of what makes the show so funny. It's kind of mercilessly mocking the 70s.
Yeah, it's intentionally dated.
Yeah.
Well, and then Krusty shows up late, thinks he's at a Republican benefit, which is great.
We see Miss Panty Candy. No actual lines, though.
Has no lines, but she's back. I feel like they really dropped a ball with Miss Penny.
I like
she
that dynamic.
Yeah. But I think the writers just were not interested in her as a joke delivery system. And so she fell away. I didn't know what the song MacArthur Park was until after
episode. I didn't even realize this is the first time I heard MacArthur Park because
me too.
I was a big Weird Al fan. That Jurassic Park album dropped. I'm like, I like the song. I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, I didn't actually listen to MacArthur Park.
So the Jurassic Park song, Jurassic Park is frightening in the dark. All the dinosaurs are running wild. Someone let T-Rex out of his pen. And they say that he might harm me. He sure don't act like Barney.
Oh, Barney references. Right. I love it. It's so 1994?
Yeah. But so this, MacArthur Park, my mom laughed at it. And she had to, again, explain to me what MacArthur Park was. Because for her generation, MacArthur Park is famously a long, boring song do not like.
And okay, the idea good. Because it's really dumb.
Well, it became like a... It became
someone
like a
left the cake
song.
Out in the rain. That's a line.
Yeah,
I'll never have that recipe again.
It was definitely a song people didn't want to hear at that point, and especially not slower and only on the bongos.
Yeah. By Apu's niece or something?
Yeah, it was kind of like if you were to say in 2002, let's hear the Macarena. Like
on a sitar.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God! And then, but Lisa's talent comes up. Yet another callback to like the late '60s, '70s.
Some people say that to love your country is old-fashioned, uncool, real Melvin. Well, to them I say, oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's a good job in the city. Working for the man every night and day.
This sequence is so well animated.
Yeah.
Wonderfully the, Tina Turner.
The fame dance or whatever?
I think it's Tina Turner covered the Creedence Clearwater song most famously.
I mean, she's doing Tina Turner's version of that song.
Yeah.
And then when she's doing the fame dancing.
Yeah, after that.
And then meanwhile, Homer's eating petroleum jelly. And I actually have an aversion to petroleum jelly because when I was a little kid, I licked my lips too much.
To get the smear on
And so my parents would do as a way to like not get you to lip your lips is to put the jelly on your mouth so you won't touch it. And it's just like, ugh.
That does sound pretty disgusting.
I meant to look it up earlier, but like, real Melvin, like, what the fuck does Melvin
I've heard
mean?
Like, don't be a Melvin.
Yeah,
I don't know what
Melvin,
that's from.
Well, Melvin is clearly defined in the South Park episode where about two guys jerking off in a hot tub.
Right.
It was the Butters. It was the first True Butters episode.
That's right. It was like the multiple like connected interconnected stories episode. Yeah,
but in that one, it's you know Stan is stuck hanging out with Melvins.
Yeah,
defined by Butters and his other friends who are just like well-meaning dweebs who kind of are dumb and unpopular.
Yeah,
like Butters is a total Melvin. So when you think of a Melvin, just think of Butters.
I think
from
of the
somewhere.
Melvins, but I guess that's where their name comes from as well.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I think. And then comes the reference that offhanded reference to Vanessa Williams in 1984, but that
is that you, what that was too?
It absolutely
click, 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 click,
click, click.
Yeah,
I can't. That was the first time anyone had ever had to give up the.
She did have to give it up.
Yes, because. So, all right, quick version of the story. Vanessa Williams, who now we all know is just, you know, a famous person, pop star, all that stuff.
Did you talk show host? Dancing with the Star?
In 1983, she won the Miss America contest. Mm-hmm. But it would turn out that before she became a famous beauty queen, she posed for some nude photographs for money, and then I believe she posed for nude photographs. I don't remember if it was paid or not, but somebody had those, offered first to sell them to Playboy. Hugh Hefner turned it down.
Penthouse.
And then Penthouse and Bob Guccione took it up and got a ton of money for it, and it humiliated her.
Mm-hmm.
And
but stripped her of her crown?
Well, and so it was a very negative thing. Everybody attacked her for it, even though like this was a thing
vaguely
on
remember
her.
This.
And so what could have turned into a protracted battle between her and the Miss America pageant, she said, I relinquish my crown. It'll
Which
just
she was
be
probably asked to do.
And this was in 84, she gives it up. It was in July 84, she gives it up.
You know, that really makes
But she got to keep all the money she won and her crown.
It makes the ending make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
I'm proud to announce via Google Image Search, these nude pics are just one search away.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
They're on my phone currently.
So take that, Bob Guccione.
First, I'll have to do Vanessa Williams to remember what she looks like.
But I do, you
it's
know,
worth it.
That shows you how different things are now and then. And like in 84,
some puritanical horseshit.
Yeah,
I thought we
it was
were beyond.
Puritanical horseshit. That like, oh no, this model posed for a nude photo. How dare she?
This person we're rewarding based on their looks alone. Yeah.
But you got rewarded too much for your looks, and you're and like it was also her race then came into it too, and it was just.
It's just like a black woman to pose for nude pictures. That's cross check out.
But meanwhile, now I feel like every famous woman is just like one hack away from unfortunately having like nudes leaked.
We've just seen it,
But then also, most famous people like people are naked and then they get famous. Now, like Kim Kardashian was famous first for the
sex tape,
Ray
J,
and then And so I don't know.
Paris Hilton became famous for giving the worst blowjob I've ever seen. Like, no rhythm to it whatsoever.
No passion.
She was only 21, Chris. She had time to learn.
If you were to make that video now, I bet she'd be better. But then again, what is she? You think she's even given a... anyway. Look,
talking blowjobs.
Yeah, like, I don't want to... what I specifically don't want to do, though, is make it sound like, oh, these women are just famous for having sex. Like, they should get as much fame as they can out of that shit.
Sure.
Like, be as famous as possible.
The shit out of it.
Like,
people are willing to pay to see their body. Mm-hmm. Go for it.
Yeah. I'm real proud. I think Kim Kardashian is a really impressive businesswoman. Like, she's done a lot with what so many other people just like squander. Like, she's one of the most powerful video game creators around.
She's literally a dynasty.
It's all that OJ murder money, though.
Anyway, so that is what click, click means.
Holy shit.
Don't say it'll never happen.
And it was a good way of getting around a plot device. So they do have to explain plot-wise why Lisa will become it. And, you know, as a viewer, I definitely thought, with them saying that Lisa will inherit the crown, I know she's going to.
Yeah.
But do you think it's a little weird that even at this point in the series, Lisa would buy into this and, like, get into it and want to win?
She should have been against this from the beginning.
I think so, yeah.
But
yeah.
but also, she from the beginning, she's also doing it as a favor to her father.
Yeah, I guess that is the way that they excuse it. So, yeah, I'm okay with that.
But, of course, does Lisa win? Trusty will tell us.
Hey, the runner-up is...
I love Trusty.
Lisa Simpson, which means Amber Dempsey is the new Little Miss Springfield.
That's still a better reading than Steve Harvey. Like, you don't announce the runner-up.
I don't know if you have the Little Miss Springfield song.
Dude, no.
But there is a lyric for every letter in Little Miss Springfield.
Yes, and we
T is for her tooth-filled mouth. T is for her tooth-filled mouth.
I want the full version of that song.
Me too.
Song.
I hope it exists.
It's got to be like 8 minutes long.
Well, Family Guy would have done the whole joke.
Yeah.
And Dan Castellaneta is singing his heart out on that song, too, his crusty.
We'll get to more Dan, because, again, I keep over-highlighting Barney in this, but this is a great scene with Kent Brockman and Barney, and another scathing takedown of local news, but also a good Barney moment.
I have a reference I never got before.
What's in from this?
Yeah.
Oh.
Please play it.
Scott, everyone is here, from the mayor's illegitimate son to our own Duff Blimp.
Hey, can I drive?
Well, I can't see the arm. Oh, the humanity! Anyway, turn on the store's severe tire damage spikes. Here's Little Miss Springfield.
So every line of that is perfect.
We have the Hindenburg thing, which I did get. Yeah. But
we all got that.
She is opening a store called Shop, a Danish super chain, which is a parody of IKEA.
Yeah.
Even back then, it was an IKEA parody. Yeah. I had no freaking clue.
Yeah, I had no idea either. I didn't see an IKEA until I moved here.
Like, I didn't see an IKEA until like 2009,
My hometown still doesn't have one.
There weren't IKEAs on the East Coast. Not in Florida.
I didn't hear about it until literally Fight Club.
But much later, The Simpsons do go to Shop again, S-H-whatever-O-P, and it's colored like IKEA.
Symbol for Boron.
Yeah, it's like the blue and yellow IKEA colors. It's in this thing, it's just like a draped over sign that says Shop on it. But
I mean, I do love IKEA. Like, it is a bunch of shit.
I guess. It's like the fast food of furniture, though.
Exactly.
IKEA proliferating a lot in the early 90s? I tried to look it up. I couldn't find anything.
I mean, what we're seeing, stuff that happens in Springfield often reflects what is happening in L.A. When they wrote the episode.
Like a poo, you know.
Yeah. Like a poo, like people, like battering rams, breaking into libraries.
I love how important the episode makes the role of Little Miss Springfield, where you're literally cutting ribbons on stuff. I feel like there's a bunch of parodies in here that I'm missing.
Well, there's a big, cruel parody. So
really?
After she gets electrocuted.
Oh, and I got that one.
Right.
Oh, dear. It would be a shame if that pretty dress got wet.
I'd say the greater danger is her scepter acting as a lightning rod, unless it's made out of plastic. Nope. Metal.
Ladies and gentlemen, Little Miss Springfield has been struck by lightning.
The implication of an 8-year-old girl being struck by lightning.
Live on television.
And the lighting effect of The Simpsons as they're watching on television is gorgeous.
I love it. Yeah.
So, when they are swearing in Lisa as the new Little Miss Springfield, it is very specifically Lyndon Baines Johnson being sworn in after JFK's death. Marge is in the pillbox hat next to him.
Oh my God.
Just as Jacqueline Kennedy is in mourning, standing next to him. Homer is in a very specific suit to be that guy as well. Like, it's all that photograph.
You may know the Jackie Kennedy costume as Dr. Girlfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Girlfriend.
And I do want to say, like, after this, I tried as best as I could as a kid to find severe tire damage spikes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't until like 15 years later. Like, they just were not in my town. I'm like, are these real? These are real things?
I think it's when, like, parking becomes like a huge commodity.
Yeah,
you
no
need
one
to
wanted to
visit
my
city
town,
for that.
So.
Yeah, exactly. There's no parking problems in my
that
hometown.
That could be an LA thing again. Yeah.
Well, and here when I moved here, I was like, oh, parking is actually really hard.
Yeah, it sucks.
You can't just back into a space anytime you feel like it.
And but you'll always have severe tire damage. The live they might be giants out.
Also, you go. Just kidding. Another one of those. The Simpsons writers really like that.
That was in Bart the Lover with the yo-yo.
Yep.
Yeah, the exact same line.
Here you go. Just kidding.
Well, Henry, I'm glad you came to the table for that. I had a feeling it was a reference to something specific. It's framed too deliberately.
Yes.
But this I don't understand at all. Lisa is now the beauty queen, and this is, thank God, Ralph in the right voice responding to her.
Hi, fellas.
Love that chewing gum walk.
Fairy Wrigley.
What the fuck does that mean?
I think Wrigley I know. Chewing gum.
Is that a reference to the commercials?
The Doubleman twins?
No, I mean, it's just, when he says it's a chewing gum lock, which is like, I don't know, that it popped.
I think it's a reference to the, there is the Doublemint Gums of the Twins, but.
I mean, there's a Spaceball reference. The Doublemint Twins are characters in Spaceballs.
Yeah.
Oh, if you don't remember the Immortal Spaceballs joke.
Well, if you don't remember that brand of gum at all, it just, you know what bums me out is that.
I think they're saying her butt is Wrigley.
Wrigley's the gum company.
Yeah, Wrigley's a gum company, but it bumps me out that I love nothing more than watching Doublemint and Big Red Juicy Fruit commercials. Those gums barely exist. And also, sticks of gum don't even really exist.
The taste is going to move you.
But those commercials were everywhere if you grew up in the 80s, early 90s. But remember, they're all owned by Wrigley's, who owns Doublemint, Big Red, Juicy Fruit, but also a kind of gum called Wrigley's. And there were Wrigley's commercials. It was just like frost-flavored?
Yeah, mint. I think it's just Wrigley as a description of something moving.
I think it's a Doublemint Twins reference.
I'm guessing it's a reference to a commercial.
Prove me wrong, listeners.
All
right.
Because all those commercials had consistently the exact same commercial over and over. Juicy Fruit will move you. Here's some twins. Big Red did something. I think it beat the other gum.
But that
it'll let
the...
you kiss your lover longer.
Yes, a little longer. Close a little longer.
But that was the death. That was the last gasp of Clever Ralph. You will never hear him say
Oh, is that what
you're
saying?
Again.
Smart
yes.
Ralph is almost dead.
So the end of Smart Ralph.
Both Ralph and Wiggum lose all of their brains in this episode, I think.
Yeah. The deportation
As Little
stuff.
Miss Springfield, it's my pleasure to welcome you to America, the land of opportunity.
Actually, they're being deported.
I very quick, like right when the scene started, like America welcoming immigrants, like
deportation force is not so
that
funny
never happened.
Now.
Wait until we get to Much a Poo About Nothing. It's never changed.
Bob Hope,
yes.
We got a jingle.
Death stalks you at every turn. There it is, death.
That's our death jingle, which we haven't played in a while.
There's been a lot of guest stars lately.
Yeah.
Not a lot of guest stars
in writing. Trying to write up that article about Oprah appearing on The Simpsons, that if there is... In 1992, there is nobody bigger in the universe than The Simpsons. The ones who arguably were appeared on The Simpsons. Johnny Carson, Elizabeth Taylor, Michael Jackson, and arguably this time the most famous entertainer ever, also did, Bob Hope.
Hello, this is Bob. What the hell am I doing in Springfield, Hope? Hey, how about that Mayor Quimby? He's some golfer. His golf ball spends more time underwater than Greg Louganis. And now I want to show you what you're fighting for, if there was a war on. Little Miss Springfield.
Oh, the 90s.
God.
That really sums it up pretty well. Like, yep, no wars. Remember the 90s when they were when perpetual war wasn't happening?
What about Kosovo?
This sent me down a rabbit hole on YouTube where I was watching Bob Hope USO Vietnam shows where it's just decrepit old man, even in the 60s, standing next to the most gorgeous women ever put on God's green earth. It's like, how did this even happen?
It makes him such a fascinating figure. He kind of dropped movie stardom to focus on being a USO person.
Yeah.
Like someone to entertain troops. I imagine there was money in it. I don't want to say it was all valiant, but he did like it and never
stopped.
Also,
lots of adultery, too.
Yeah, probably.
With Joey Heatherton.
Yeah,
Hope lived to be 100. Didn't die for another 10 years.
Yeah.
That's why I was shocked about when I looked this up. Because for some reason in my head, I was like, oh, and he died in like 95 or something, right? Oh. But actually, when Chris and I saw Dana Gould, he had a pretty savage story of working on a Bob Hope Young Comedian
That's
special.
On one of his albums, actually. Yeah, okay. It's great, though. You should talk about it.
He says he held Bob Hope's arm and it felt like a sock full of pennies.
A sock full of light bulbs.
Light bulbs. Yes, I did used to be your khaki.
this episode, Jeff Martin and Conan O'Brien together went to record with Bob Hope.
Wow.
And they said he was like mostly blind, almost deaf, barely knew where he was, but he was very good at recording.
Sounds really good.
Yeah, and so you showed me that clip.
I love the Gilbert Gottfried podcast because you learn a lot about old Hollywood, and I love his voice, but he talks a lot about Bob Hope and how he was a horrible womanizer, cheated on his wife a ton. So towards the end of his life, he was He could barely hear, could barely see, could barely entertain. So he had an earpiece in his ear.
So he reduced his amount of network specials to three a year.
Exactly. And his wife would feed him lines. But towards the end of his career, his wife would put him in all of these super humiliating roles just to torture him in his last years because she hated him for cheating on her. See? So there's a clip, if you look up Bob Hope, Jack Frost, it's one of his final performances, him dressed up like Jack Frost, doing a musical number, sitting during most of it. And you can see the contempt in his wife's eyes. Like, yes, look at you, you fucking asshole.
I made
you're dressed
you a fool.
Up. Yeah.
Now these children will walk you around.
All leading into an Apocalypse Now reference?
Apocalypse Now, which one is that?
Yes, there is a USO show in Apocalypse Now.
Oh, yeah.
Bob Hope isn't at it, but...
But it's a Bob Hope type, and the soldiers go nuts and rush the stage, and they
well, they rush because there's Playboy Playmates on there, and then they have to...
That's the joke, because there wasn't a Playmate, so they rushed the stage anyway, and they both had to leave via helicopter, and it's Bob Hope, like, drop me off at that boat show.
I don't blame the soldiers in the audience, but watching those USO shows, I'm like, this is very, like, a very rapey audience, like a hot woman comes out and wiggles her butt. They're like, yeah!
What would you expect for guys who can only jerk off with all their friends watching?
My concern was like, is this woman safe? Like, what would happen if they all just rushed the stage? She'd be torn apart.
It was raw meat. Yeah. Be happy for... I don't know. Celebrate.
They all made it out
warfare.
Alive and unscathed. So.
Well, hey, here's the good news.
What are you going to have? You're going to have now Jeff Ross going off to entertain the drones?
Yeah.
Okay, here's some good news. This episode
or Jeff Dunham.
Predicts how cigarette sales are going now.
Yeah.
They say that they're trying to advertise Laramie's to kids because their old audience is dying, and that is what happened. Like, we grew up in an anti-cigarette ad age.
Yes.
And now our generation is smoking a lot less than
the late
90s
was the real bite to smoking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not I was an avid smoker for a decade, and I now vape, and people literally make fun of me on the streets because that's a fun thing to do, but I'm just trying to cope with addiction.
Well, you are blowing out pink clouds around you.
Not pink clouds. It's not a fucking colorized robot madness.
Penis. You put a robot penis to your mouth. And
sonic screwdriver. here's the Laramie pitch to Lisa.
You see, Lisa, it's been an unlucky year for Laramie. A lot of the people who smoke our product have been, well, dying. And we need young smokers to take their place.
I don't want to be a spokesperson for a cigarette company.
But you're a role model to young people. And we're thinking of retiring Menthol Moose.
Menthol Moose. My greatest unsung Simpsons character.
Yes, I think he died after this.
That's not a mask.
No.
It's a lip.
You can see a real mouth on that thing.
Joe Camel was still around.
Yeah.
That's how old this episode is.
Late 90s?
Yeah. Big old dick face.
So there's one joke we missed that I want to point out because there's precedent set here.
Mm-hmm.
So Lisa's popular now. She's Little Miss Springfield. They're taking her around, and she's now part of the Wax Museum. They put her head on Dr. Ruth's body, and like they cut to the Pit of Horrors, and it's her head, Mr. T, and Ronald Reagan on pikes.
Yeah.
Now, the show Game of Thrones got in huge trouble because some jokester prop guy put George W. Bush's head on a pike. They had to recall DVDs because
of
this.
Shit.
It was a huge fucking deal.
Wow.
But there was precedent set, like, no, that's a president's head on a pike. Go to hell. Like,
that's
we can do this.
You know, I didn't even think of it in that context of, like, Reagan's head on a spike is a very political statement.
I thought it was more of a statement against the 80s.
No, like, that's how I read it as a kid. It's just like,
I'm sure Groening was like, yeah, I fucking hate that guy. Yeah,
I think at first I read a statement like, 80s celebrities are old and they're not getting wax figures anymore, but Ronald Reagan's head on a pike implies something.
Yes.
He was still alive, too.
So when that Game of Thrones thing happened, everyone was pointing out, no, The Simpsons did this, and it was fine. Like, no one cared. There were no DVDs recalled. Yeah. We watched the episode. We got over it. But all of a sudden, it was like, no, you cannot do that in your show, sir.
Holy shit. DVDs were recalled.
And you can barely tell it's George W. Bush. Yeah. Like, you can tell, like, it's like a second shot. You can see the side of his face. So,
Lisa turns on the Laramie Segregation and turns into a social justice warrior.
I'm tired of being a corporate shill. From now on, I will speak out against the evils in society. From dog napping to cigarettes.
Dog napping.
By the way, if there are any cigarettes who would like to sponsor the show, we are open to this idea.
And
anything slim.
Vincent and Hedges, you still around?
I completely forgot the joke of... of the nerds rushing the football field.
So
it's so
funny.
Beautiful.
I think it's funny that they're not beaten to death after that.
Well,
let's get them.
You clearly didn't read the newspaper.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It said nerd pummeled in football melee.
I forgot about that. I was waiting for the payoff. I forgot it was delivered via newspaper.
That's one of my favorite gags that didn't work well enough in audio to capture.
Like,
but
here's my thing, though. Mm. The writers agree that this cigarette thing comes out of nowhere for a third act closure, and it's not very satisfying.
I think it just like,
I agree.
2 minutes. It falls apart. It does fall apart here.
And it's not even why she's booted off out of the role of
I mean, it is and it
field.
Isn't. Like she's making political enemies, and so they're trying to get rid of her.
I do like there's another Wiggum Quimby Smoky Room showdown, but Wiggum is too stupid
Wiggum's
to
too
participate.
Stupid.
He's eating potato chips.
I wanted the meh exchange from the... Fuck, what episode was that? But I called this Springfield Illuminati because I love it.
Homer Alone.
It's Mayor Quimby... Mayor Quimby.
The Laramie guy.
But it's Krusty and a cigarette spokesman in addition to that. The Springfield Illuminati. I love him.
Gentlemen, we need to get Lisa Simpson out and Amber Dempsey back in. But this glorified crossing guard of a police chief won't get off his big fat can.
Is it okay if I open these potato chips?
Gentlemen, our prayers have been answered. Take a look at our little Miss Springfield's pageant application.
Roxy, bring in a bottle of champagne.
Yeah, and some dip for these chips. Something.
He's so fixated on the chips.
Little ablet there.
There's one more of these showdowns, I think, with Marge versus the Monorail, where Quimby and Wiggum are in like having
That's
another
the last
smoky
time,
room
really.
Discussion. Yeah,
but the actually, there is the one in the sauna where he says, "Hey, don't tell anybody," but Marge got arrested for shoplifting.
Oh, right,
so
that
it's not a smoky back room so much as a sauna, but
yeah, it counts a bit.
So yeah, as the storytelling thing, once Lisa becomes a beauty queen, I don't think they knew what they wanted to do with her, and then it just quickly falls apart. Like a poorly built catamaran falls apart. I think they even just hang a lantern on how much they don't care about any. We're like, it's a goat.
Well, that's why, like the previous episode, I pointed out Krusty coming over to raise money for Jewish clowns is because like Simpson's whole job is to reset. At the end of every episode, it has to reset.
I like to think Lisa would be savvy enough to know a contest sponsored by a cigarette company would compromise her morals if she won it. I feel like she should know that
she
ahead of time.
She should have questioned that earlier. Maybe that's why she'll be smarter the next time with this. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, episodes like this and the Malibu Stacy episode are kind of... Are they like innocence lost that, moments for Lisa?
Yes, and I do love the episodes where Lisa gets to play a little girl. It's nice that she's the voice of reason in a family of idiots, but like
that she's the voice of reason, but she still is a little girl, and occasionally she'll get woken up to this other thing you thought was innocent part of your childhood. It also is evil, and you might need to be protested or whatever. Yeah. God, I can't wait for the Malibu Stacy episode.
We're so close. We have to get Diana on that, I think.
Is that season 5?
Season 5, yeah.
So
this episode goes
those
off.
Those goats, that goat band.
Yeah, that's the end of the episode.
Lisa Simpson is no longer Little Miss Springfield. She was stripped of her crown in a ceremony earlier today. But it does seem the father of the deposed beauty queen, Homer Simpson, filled out the pageant application incorrectly. In the area under Do Not Write in This Space, he wrote, okay.
If it wasn't for me, it'd still be Queen. You must hate me.
Dad, do you remember why you entered me in that pageant?
I don't know. Was I drunk?
Possibly. But the point is, you wanted me to feel better about myself. And I do.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Will you remember this the next time I wreck your life?
It's a deal.
Would she?
It's the Brockman news cutting to the goat is such a good
gag. The sound of him walking out of the room was really good too. Like it sounded like Shearer actually did like walk out of the recording booth.
I love the line, "I'll be downstairs at McDougal's." It calls back to that drunk journalist era, the drunk TV journalist era. Because when I went to college like 15 years ago, I was a TCOM major originally, telecommunications. I took an announcing class, which is why my diction is so great, of course. I was taught by the great Tom Holden of Youngstown, Ohio. He was basically the Ron Burgundy of our town in the 70s, but at that time he was a washed up like former alcoholic, but he was Kent Brockman basically. Like he looked like Kent Brockman, he spoke like him, he had a giant Jim Blossom nose. So when I heard this line, I'm like, that's him. Like this era of news anchors.
I actually read the Anchorman script at one point. The original script it called for like Tom Brokaw and Dan Rather to be in a bar. It was supposed to open with every famous newscaster talking about Ron Burgundy in the 70s.
Well, that also reminds me, you know, in Network, Network showed you the life of a news anchor, and they all are going out for drinks afterwards. They're all drunk.
Well, I don't know if that's changed or it's just become, like, just sort of accepted, but, like, the drunk news guy, journalist, news anchor, anyone associated with the press is just
what if, hypothetically, you ready for this? I'm going to blow your minds.
Oh, God.
What if that's what everybody does?
Oh!
What are we about to do after, like, right after this recording?
Oh, drink more beer?
Yes! Go downstairs and drink more beer!
I want to get drunk and stay up all night!
But the Kent Brockman joke is great. I love Lisa getting to play the role of the little girl. I just wish I could workshop the writing some okay. And there's a good joke in the application thing. It just...
Yeah.
I think it's bad to have Kent Brockman read it out
it's
loud.
It's a very cheap way to finish it.
It takes too long.
It both takes too long and just speeds it up. There, he wrote okay in the thing. It's over. Boop, it's over.
And more behind-the-scenes stuff. I think on the commentary they said there were, like, the whole writing staff had basically vacated, so they didn't have the pool of talent to draw from for ideas. So it was basically just, like, a few people left at this point that, like, I think they took a break after season three.
The goat cutaway is the good joke. Yes. The good part of the joke.
I love when things don't go right for Kent Brockman and he leaves.
So good.
It happens several times.
It's more unprofessional for him to just leave the set than for the things coming at him.
Yeah.
How does this happen? These shows are supposed to be a half an hour. Right.
They're getting so goddamn good, Chris. No. We can't just leave it to half an hour. The fans demand it. Please give us more money, by the way. I have been your host, Bob Mackey. This is Talking Simpsons. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I also host another podcast. It's called Retronauts. It's a classic gaming podcast. You can find it at retronauts.com or usgamer.net. Also read my writing at usgamer.net or somethingawful.com. Henry, what do you do?
I'm HENEREYG on Twitter, and you can follow my work at fandom.com, where I'm the senior games editor. But there's other great things you can do, like listening to all my appearances in the Laser Time family of podcasts. I used to do a comic book podcast called Cape Crisis, which you can still download if you want to listen to it. But more recently, I've been on episodes of Video Game Apocalypse of Laser Time. But most importantly, the patreon.com/lasertime special season 3 wrap-up of Talking Simpsons. For $5 a month, you'll get access to that, as well as our season 2 wrap-up, and the entire first season of Talking Simpsons all there, and tons more bonus content you will get for monetarily supporting us being able to do this podcast every week, along with a bunch of other podcasts. $5 a month, patreon.com/lasertime.
That is 15 new episodes of Talking Simpsons you probably haven't heard before, right?
Yeah. And so much more, right, Chris?
Yeah, and you can find me at lasertimepodcast.com. We do have a ton of fun shows there. Please take my word for it. Just go listen. They're available in everywhere you listen to your podcast. Your iTunes, your fucking Spotify's, what's the other ones? Oh, my God.
Google
Stitcher,
Play.
Stitcher, Google Play.
Yeah, Google Play.
Let's go drink.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another Treehouse of Horror, one of the best ones. See you then.
So close to Halloween.
Wow, infotainment.